Imelda Murphy, Imelda Hartnett Murphy, I should say, and Cleaver Lestrole.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say to you that when I was walking in, it was a bit of a cold day, but you have a beautiful warm house and very inviting.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I suppose we're here today to talk about my late uncle, Thomas Archer, who was killed in action during the Troubles, the War of Independence. Mm-hmm. He was killed in Causeway. And we're very happy to say there is a monument up to his memory in Causeway, and also in the graveyard in Kilflinde that we erected his nieces and nephews. Mm-hmm. And joining me today here is my brother, Eamon Hartnett.
Eamon, how are you?
Hello, wasn't it? Yeah. How are you doing?
All good, all yeah. good.
Melda has all the history of it. I know some of it as well, but Melda has that little bit more than me. You know, she spent more time with our mother, God be good to her. Yeah, so.
Imelda, you obviously never met your uncle, but you knew
no,
a lot from your
16,
mother.
Yes.
It was 1921.
1920. 6th of November 1920. Okay. I suppose the basic story is we also want to thank Tim Horrigan, the historian, who dedicated a chapter in his book, Dying for the Cause, to it, and he seemed to have a lot of information, which was passed on to me as well, and Eamon, and all our family. But basically, Thomas was 16-year-old, working in Casey's farm in Foxford in Causeway. And it was around the time of the burning of Ballyhie Castle. And Black and Tans were on the move, and they were looking for information and rounding up volunteers or whatever. So they came into Casey's farm, firing shots and, you know, creating mayhem, whatever. So Tom was scout or dispatch boy, whichever you like to call it. And he was sent to Flynn's, Nicholas Flynn's farm, where there was volunteers hiding out there to warn them of the Tans being in the area. So he ran at haste across the fields. And I believe Flynn's farm is in Farn, in to warn the Black, but he was detected by the Black and Tans, and they were firing shots around the area, so they pursued him, and he kept running, and he crossed a couple of ditches, and lo and behold, he was shot in the back, and he was shot through the heart, and we think he died instantly, and he lay in the field for many hours, we don't know how long. So they pursued Flynn's farm, and they were firing shots, and luckily, the volunteers escaped to safety. There was nobody found there, but they were in the area for an awful long time. And I believe bullets were lodged in that barn for many years afterwards. And it is only in latter years that barn was dismantled. Mm. But the bullets were lodged there for so long. We don't know how long he lay in the field, but at some stage he was brought into Flynn's barn, and he was led out there. And word got to his family, his parents in Kilflin. He was from Clonafanila, Kilflin, Thomas was. And the word got to his family of his passing. And his father, Teddy Archer, and a cousin, Francie Cashel, came with horse and car and collected his remains and brought him back to Kilflin. Mm. And he was laid out in Kilflin, in the barn in Kilflin. And therefore he's buried in Kilfling graveyard, the old cemetery, where we have a marking up to him as well from his nieces and nephews, which we are very proud of. Now,
Imelda, do you mind me asking how many siblings did he have in his family? What was
there were seven boys that were living and two girls, my mother being the youngest girl, we'll say, but six of the boys were out in the movement. They're all listed in Tim Horrigan's book. And after the War of Independence, that was 1920. Then came straight after was the Civil War. And there was a divide in the family as to the politics of the day. So Bill, he's a bit younger than Tom, Bill Archer, he joined the Free State Army, much to the disgust of his family at that time, as politics was so strong, and he was drafted into Lestrole. He was only 18. And he was in the stall for, we don't know how many years, but not that many years. And he went to America quite young, where he never returned, stayed in America. He was a guard in the stall in the old bank, the National Bank. That was their headquarters that time, the guards. John immigrated to America. Betty did. A lot of the family immigrated and some stayed, you know, as was that in them times. John and Bill continued their, I suppose, disgust at the politics, and they were never sort of, when they went to America, the politics continued of the day here. So that's the way it went, as it was in most families. Mm-hmm. Now, what?
I was just going to say, your mom being the youngest woman in the family, the youngest girl, she probably saw so much happening in front of her.
She did. She was about 9, 10 at the time. And all along, you know, and she saw that she remembered bits about the Civil War as well, and the remains coming into their home in Kilflin. And she said the neighbours went down by, it was the month of November, it was dark, and all the neighbours went down and they lit sods and pikes to welcome the remains back. Do you know, like, the neighbours came out in force, sort of, which they would in them cases. So
That was some days, I think 3 to 4 days maybe,
after
he was shot. Yeah. And the reason for the delay in bringing him back to his home was that there was such activity by the Black and Tans over in Causeway that they weren't allowed to go over to collect the remains.
They
were frightened, I suppose.
They were frightened and, you know, rigor mortis had set in, whatever. They got great help from the family of the Flynns, and they were the neighbours around. But that was really how it happened. And when did I say when he was young, he had a beautiful singing voice?
No, you didn't tell us about that.
No, he had a beautiful singing voice. So he had left school at that stage. We believe that he was, as they used to call it, a great scholar. And when the inspector would be called to Kappa School, when the inspector, he'd be called upon to sing for the inspector, and his songs were of the collection of Thomas Moore's melodies, and the neighbours used to come and gather and listen to him sing. I believe he had a beautiful singing voice. Mm. So that's just a little.
Was he close with your mum?
You see, she was about 9, 10 at the time. He was. She can remember him well, yeah, and remember when all that incident happened, do you know. Mm. But he was close with all his brothers, you know. They were all out in the movement at that time, and their house also was a safe house where people would gather. And there's a story there that there would come a crowd of them and they'd give up their beds to the volunteers as children, and they weren't allowed to look up from the room in case they could identify anybody. And they would usually leave at dawn in case of being discovered, you know, and they would go on to another safe house. But she always had the story about when she was going to Kappa School with other children, and they would be the Toomies, which their brother was also involved in the Belly City. And I suppose the families felt suspect, you know, like that they were out in the movement or whatever. And they'd go up to the Black and Tan, just go up to Kappa School and question the children. Were your brothers at home last night? How many were in the house? And who was in your house last night, you know, and questioned the children. They were always choosing to say, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. And she carried that into her life always, didn't she? And if she didn't want to answer a question.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't
the great
know.
Answer.
I don't know. She would carry that into her life. Maybe you can continue. Well,
you also say, you was written down there, that when they were going to school, they were given extra food.
They were?
Sandwiches and food.
And milk bottles and of milk.
Go ahead.
Yeah, come on, Emma.
And they would leave them at a designated spot. They'd be told in a ditch on the way to school. And they were for
the
boys on their own.
Unbelievable. But how did they get that message across?
I suppose to save houses from one to the other.
Okay.
Parents. Organised by the parents. Yeah.
And now there is another story. I don't know if it's relevant or not. Yeah.
And also that when Tom's funeral took place, you can tell that part about the Black and Tans.
Yeah.
Some of them were there.
Yeah.
And they were afraid to leave the house unoccupied. to go to the funeral, that some of the family stayed back because of fear that the house would be burnt.
It was customary that time.
Yeah.
And the black and tans that were involved in his shooting, they came to the funeral and made out his mother. Her name was Margaret, Mag, as us to call her. And he said to her, "There is no. We're very sorry it happened. We told him to halt 3 times and he wouldn't stop. But he was still shot in the back, whatever." And
Does a mother respond to that?
How does a mother? He said, "There is no need for you to leave your house. Nothing will happen to you. You know, there is no need for you to leave." Usually they would have to leave the house and go to neighbours or whatever in case of reprisals, you know, whatever. So, Eamon, do you want to say anything?
No, that was it.
That was it, yeah.
It was a gesture.
It's the humane side of it.
It was a humane gesture made by the black and tans during his funeral.
Yeah.
But do you mind me asking, you know, his parents and obviously all of your uncles and aunts, like, you know, they've just lost their brother. How do you just accept that?
I suppose following the Civil War straight away afterwards and the divide in politics, it was bitter.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bill wasn't welcome home when he came to Listowel, you know, for joining the other side.
Yeah.
But that was politics of the day.
Yeah. And now look at it. Look at today, you know.
Look at today, yes.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But you mentioned, you know, your mother has passed away and she said lots of stuff when she was alive and you wish you had wrote it then, but you're writing bits now. So what was she saying?
She was saying, when, as I said about the safe houses, they were never allowed her mothers to make bread for them, and they often got up in the morning to go to school and there'd be no bread in the house. The boys would have it gone there, they'd feed them, and they'd be gone off some other house again. But I suppose they were never acknowledged, really, for their part in it. The women played a big part, a very big part, in the movement. And it was never recognised.
Yeah, overlooked.
Overlooked. And there is another story, I don't know, is it relevant or not, to you. Aero Lines was their captain. He died afterwards in Clashmelkin, I think, whatever.
Yeah.
Aero Lines was their captain. And he used to round up his men by this method. He used to call to the houses of his volunteers and he'd be rounding up his men and he'd go as a bigger man looking for arms. At that time, that was very customary. So the woman of the house feed him or give him bread or whatever and they'd go from house to house. So she was bending over the bread bin, getting bread for him and whatever, getting food for him. And John, one of the volunteers, a brother of Thomas's, was sitting at the fireplace. And Aero Lines, that was the bigger man, he was dressed as a bigger man. He pulled back his coat and he had a band of shining bullets and that was his nod to John. He was wanted. Okay? So when he left, she said, "Mama," she said, "that man," she said, "that was there, he had a beautiful band of shining pencils. A beautiful band of shining pencils." And John said to her, he gave her a little slap across the face, said, "You'll never to say that to anybody." So they came through them times and
you
know,
how do you know come to anyone about anything then, because everything was just you have to be so quiet, you have to keep secrets. That's terrifying.
They used to go around cutting the roads, as it was called, as well,
the older brothers.
It was the main Listowel. They lived up over looking down on the main Listowel Tralee Road. And during the night they would go down and cut the road, basically. Dig a big trench across the road to slow the movement of the tan lorries, the black and tan lorries.
Yeah.
They would dig up the road, basically, and they wouldn't be able to cross. They'd have to fill it in, you know, to get across the road.
And I think that was usually done during the night or early hours of the morning.
When you can't be seen.
And another incident, she did say they had a fort in their field, in their land, and she was pondering about one day, our mum, Mary, and she came across a shining blue ball. And she went up home and she said it. "There's a beautiful shining blue ball," she said, "above the fort." And it was an incendiary device. You know, for blowing up the roads or whatever.
Oh my God. But she lucky she ran away from it?
She was lucky she ran away from it. But they didn't know, but they were all warned never to say. And then there was a curfew in Tralee around that time. around that time, that where all the lights would have to be out. No lights could be on the houses at a certain hour, curfew, and you couldn't go out. I don't know what time was it, past 9 o'clock at night or whatever. You couldn't be out, seen outside. And she said they used to, naturally, it was tilly lamps and candles at the time. They'd put on the light, all right, and they'd be sent out to see, could you see it through the windows and darken the windows? Could you see the light inside?
Oh,
curfew,
goodness.
Imagine, like, no lights or anything.
So scary.
It was.
Tell me a bit about when you went to the site and you were acknowledged.
We were very welcomed by
Flynn's.
By Donnie Flynn and his family. He actually showed us the spot where he died, and the ditch has, naturally enough, has been removed since. And he took us to the barn where he was laid out. That still exists today.
What was that like?
It was a small little barn across the yard from their farm. And, you know, it was nostalgic, really. It was, you brings you back in time. If you like, he was only 16. He was only a child, like, really.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't unique. Most of the young people at that time were involved in the movement, one way or another.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you find that it kind of helped to get some closure on it when you went?
I did, actually. Our mother went previously many years ago, and she met the Flynn's as well, and very much welcomed. And, you know, it was great, really. It was brought closure to all of us. And we're not a political family, I must say. Do you know, we've come with the times, full circle.
Yes, naturally.
You know, all of us. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was the way it was back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what was it like for yourself when you went into the site and saw the barn?
You went to it all, Mum, years ago.
I did. And I remember a memorial cross being there, a metal cross being on the spot where he fell, basically. That's not there anymore. You know, with time and age, that's gone, you know. Mm-hmm. But we did find the Flynn family very accommodating.
Yeah.
And they've told us that any time we want to go back there, that we're more than welcome, you know.
And that must mean so much to you as a family.
It does. And then the memorial was put up in Causeway Village, along with another volunteer.
James O'Hanlon was a...
The two memorials are back-to-back.
He was in the Civil War, yeah.
In Causeway Village.
Yeah.
What's it like having that memorial and see his name there?
It's lovely.
It's
lovely recognition.
You know, that he was recognised for his part in the struggle.
Yeah. And can we pay tribute to Thomas Harrington?
That's right.
And Tim Horrigan, they were all responsible for the memorials. And Tim's book... The proceeds were dedicated to all the memorials.
Oh,
you know, proceeds
wow.
of his book.
Yeah.
And a wonderful historian. And he has a passage in his book on that as well. But and Tom Harrington. And there was a lot of other people involved.
Tom Harrington, Thomas from Clashmelkin.
Yes.
Near the monument there.
Yeah. We pay tribute to all of them.
Yeah.
You know, they were wonderful people.
Mm-hmm. As a family now, and you know, as you said, you were very close with your mum. Are you closer now than you to realise how important family is?
Oh, family's close. We've always been close.
We were always close.
We were always close.
Mm-hmm. We were. There were six of us. Even though the other four siblings, Melda and myself, are the youngest. I'm the youngest. Melda's second youngest. And the other four then are somewhat older. You know, as a matter of fact, the oldest of my family, of our family, is Anna. There's three of them dead. Anna is dead, and my first recollection growing up of Anna was when she came back from England. They emigrated, the four of them emigrated.
Okay.
And we grew up then. But my first recollection of Anna was when she came back from England to introduce her husband to be to our family.
How old were you?
Six or seven.
It's like seeing a cousin coming.
I don't remember. You remember
a little
Anna.
Bit? Yeah,
you
yeah,
remember
yeah,
Anna
yeah.
When you were younger.
Yeah,
but I don't. My first recollection was she coming back from England. She went nursing in England.
Yes, many women did back
they
in.
Did.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
Did. The Margaret, our other sister, she was also deceased. She went to Dublin. Working in Dublin.
Yeah.
And the two boys then went to London, went to England.
Yeah. So the two of you would be quite close, didn't
we? We are a close family. Yeah.
And I suppose it's so important, you know, not to shy away from history and be proud of it. And I suppose, like you're doing now today, is getting the story across and letting it be heard. Because a lot of people could be in the same boat.
Yes. And a lot of people, you know, I can remember my late uncle, this is diverting from it, the day the DI was shot in the stall. District Inspector Tobias O'Sullivan. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows where they were that day.
Yeah.
And he was coming from school, Paddy Hartnett.
Yeah.
He was coming from school. He lived in Clavering, just down the road. And there was mayhem at the railway bridge and firing shots. And they were trying to find, you know, the people responsible for the murder of, or the killing of Tobias O'Sullivan, the DI as they've called him. Everyone remembers, and he hid inside in the Slough Hall. He was there for hours. They were afraid to come over the bridge. He'd under, there was a market garden there at the time, the Slough Hall down the road. And he'd there for hours, and a lot of people went missing. Everyone seemed to remember where they were back in them days, the day the DI was shot in the stall.
Unbelievable. And do you mind me saying, finally, you know, as we were sitting here and we're looking out the window on a beautiful day here in the stall, do you realise how lucky we are now in the days that we're in and the climate that we're in, that we can actually say, yeah, we're safe at home, we can walk out, we can talk to anyone, and there's nothing to be ashamed of.
Especially
with what's going on in other countries.
Yeah.
You know, the wars that are going on there, you know, they're terrible. You know, so...
We're very lucky people.
Yeah, we are. Yeah,
we have an amazing country, and we don't recognise it enough.
And let people say what they like about our governments of the day. There'll always be controversy over the governments of the day. We have a great country, and we think it's well run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we have a great country, and we think, and we're not politically minded.
Yeah.
We'll put it that way. Well, you know, we aren't really. Yeah.
And like you said there as well, like it. There is so much happening in the world right now that we're so kind, but we're also so lucky.
That's true.
We're very, very lucky.
That's true.
In the times that our parents and grandparents were brought up in, they were very restricted, really.
Yeah.
Sad times.
Mm-hmm. Sad. And for me personally, it's so hard to believe, but that's the way it was.
That's the way it was. And like our parents came from, our mother did, farming background. A farm can only... really supported a big family, but they all had to go and make life. Some of them immigrated, some of them stayed, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was the way of life back then.
You were talking about that Tom was a nice singer.
Yeah.
You know, but singing was in the family.
It was.
You know, singing and music was in the family. Who was the man that used to go around
teaching music from house to house? He was a Teddy Archer.
Teddy Archer.
Sure, going back, he would have been his granduncle, I'd say.
Granduncle.
Yeah. So he got that from him?
We do.
He did, AM and plays music. Yeah.
Oh, go on, what do you play?
Accordion. Play accordion, yeah. And you were a good singer. Our mother was a good singer.
She was.
So are you.
And
you know,
my son, he plays a lot of music.
Sean's a very good player. He lives over in Ennis in County Clare.
He's
a well-known musician over there in County Clare. To be well-known as a musician in Clare is an honour.
Yes.
He plays with the Star Munster Cayley Band.
Oh my goodness.
And they're also with another group, the Lost Paddies, and they're travelling Europe this summer.
Oh wow.
He's a teacher in Innistimon.
I can imagine.
In the secondary.
Beautiful.
But Eamon is a beautiful accordion player. And he plays in Áras Mhíre and our quorum.
It's a nursing home.
Nursing home here in the Stall.
Daycare centre, yeah.
And many sessions. He does many sessions.
Well, we must come with you someday, Eamon, if you don't mind.
Well,
it'd be lovely to go back to the Áras Mhíre.
And
himself and Tom Baum plays the Bowron and the Jainin singing, the patients and everything.
Oh, I think that'd be fab.
That's a date for you.
But listen, lads, it was lovely to meet you, and thank you so much for sharing such a hard story, but it's important to get those stories out there.
Yes.
But Imelda and Eamon, thank you so much.
Yeah, I hope we've done it justice, and that I know you will. And if we've made any mistakes, we're sorry. But we've told it from the heart, really.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's where the best stories come from.
We told it from the heart. And our mother brought us up. What did she always say? Not to be too political. To go with the flow, you know, of the times. And it was good advice.
Yeah. And it still stands today.
And it was good advice.
Yeah.
We hold our own.
And it was a it was something that she took on board herself, I suppose, really.
Yeah.
Coming from a staunchly Republican family. She actually married she married into a family that were known as Fine Gael.
The Fine Gaelers.
Our dad came from John Joe Hartnett.
She later life turned to Fianna Fáil. She voted for her first cousin, Dan Maloney, DJ Maloney. He was senator. And she went with Dan. She went with family.
The house vote was split. which wasn't very common that time.
No. She was doing the new era.
She was.
Yeah.
Well, lads, thank you so much.
Yeah, lovely. And thank you, Kaya.